Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than half of the nation's $60 billion in domestic wine sales are generated in California. The state's wine industry generates nearly $115 billion a year in economic activity when employment and tax revenue are factored in. Like most of the agricultural sector, this business relies on immigrant labor. A federal survey found in 2016, 9 out of 10 California farm workers were born abroad, most of them in Mexico. In the new documentary Harvest Season, filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz spotlights the hard work and dedication of the people who work in the fields of Napa and Sonoma, two counties that are visited by people from around the globe. He also tells the stories of two Mexican-American winemakers and their determination to keep their heritage and livelihood afloat after the devastating wildfires that hit the region in 2017. Today, we are joined by Bernardo Ruiz, a two-time Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker based in New York. He has made films about attacks on the press in Mexico and the drug war in Mexico. His most recent film is Harvest Season. It aired May 13th on PBS's documentary series Independent Lens and is now available to watch online. You can find the link at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Bernardo. Welcome to the show, and thank you for making this incredible film.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much. It's really good to be here.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Vanessa Robledo, a fourth-generation grower, winemaker, and entrepreneur in Sonoma. Vanessa and her mom, Maria, run a vineyard. She also owns a wine business consulting company. And Vanessa joins us in studio. Hi, Vanessa. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. Well, Bernardo, I was so glad to hear about this film because I grew up in Petaluma, which is very close to what is known now as the wine country. And, you know, we do a lot of shows about farm workers in the Central Valley. There's not so much information out there, I mean, unless you really dig for it, about the people who work in the vineyards. So why did you want to take on this project?
I mean, I think precisely for the reason that you gave. You know, given how much media there is about the, you know, how much romantic imagery there is about Napa and Sonoma and wine country. I mean, obviously Netflix has a comedy out now, but there's a kind of there's one image that's put out in the world, and I wanted to make a film that dug a little deeper and looked at the people who work behind the scenes. But my main goal was to create a layered portrait, that is to say, not to just talk about the workers, but to talk about the second and third generation residents, you know, part of the Mexican diaspora in California who are making wine. So like Vanessa and like Gustavo Brambila, who've been making wine, growing grapes for decades, and who are a part of that history. So my goal was really just to tell a kind of deeper and more layered portrait of place. That would go beyond the more superficial story that we've heard about Napa and Sonoma.
And Vanessa, why did you decide to take part in this project? Because we learn a lot about your family history and the relationships. I mean, we'll talk about all of this, but the culture involved and why you decided to step out on your own. Why did you decide to take part in this?
Well, I think initially when Bernardo approached me, I was a little reluctant. But I think that, like what you both were talking about in the beginning, it's so important to get the message out of the work and the contributions of the Mexican people in the wine industry. And my roots, that's where my roots are. It's people that come from, you know, Mexico, from small villages in Mexico, and come here, and they work really, really hard to be able to create this beautiful wine that everybody consumes and doesn't really realize the backstory to it.
Yeah, it's so, so important. I have to say, Bernardo, what really got me was, you know, the footage that you got of the farm workers coming from Mexico to Napa and then taking a bus back home and just hugging their crying daughters after 5 months. But in addition, the juxtaposition of people on the wine country train and people just having a nice time with their wine and then showing the immigrants and Mexicans in church. I just thought you did such a good job with that. And I really hope that people who enjoy these places see this film. So let's talk a little bit, Vanessa, since you talked about the importance of really looking at the people who work behind the scenes. I mean, on so many levels, this is personal for you because you were raised in a family of farm workers. Your great-grandfather started working in the vineyards for many generations in Mexico in his small pueblo, and then he came to the United States in the 1940s during the World War II. Talk about the program that he was involved with when he came to Napa.
So my family, like many other Mexican families, were part of the Braceros program. So they were initially, they were seeked out from these pueblos, and that they had agricultural background. And so basically their resume was their calluses in their hands and their body mass to show that they were physically capable of farming and doing labor work. So they were brought into these labor camps throughout the country. And my family, my great-grandfather and grandfather were in Hillsburg, California, in Sonoma County. There's on Dry Creek, there was a labor camp there where they lived. And that's how they began to farm all sorts of different fruit trees, including in there were vineyards. And that's how initially they became master grafters in the wine industry. So it was, of course, after Prohibition and when the American viticulture and winemaking business became to grow or was going to become commercialized again. So that was the history of my family. And so that's, you know, that's a really, I think, a very powerful thing, not just my family, but also all the other braceros that, you know, have contributed so much, you know, and just have not been recognized for that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any information about the braceros in Napa County?
Actually, not that I know of in Napa County. I could be wrong, though. But I know that the Smithsonian did a wonderful collaboration with the braceros and the contributions in the wine industry. So they do have something at the Smithsonian.
You say that most of the men in your family worked in the vineyards. You actually walked the vineyards with your grandfather. And then your mom also has a very interesting background. She grew up in a very traditional family, got married at 16, had 9 children, and then she divorced your dad when you were in your 30s. And you said that you never saw your mom stand up for herself before.
Yeah, I grew up in a very traditional home. So my mom was always in the kitchen. She's always had like this amazing energy about her and always very happy and positive about the world and everything. But her life was, you know, she was meant to get married at 16, you know, young. And she happened to fall in love with my dad at love at first sight. And then came to this country not knowing, you know, the language. It was so foreign to her. A lot of people, it's interesting how my mom, she describes it. People are called, you know, aliens from other countries, like they're aliens. But my mom thought everybody here were kind of aliens, mm-hmm. because it was foreign to her. And so her journey has also been pretty remarkable. You know, had 9 children, I have 7 brothers and 1 sister, and, you know, all very, you know, we had to learn English. I mean, Spanish, excuse me. We had to keep our culture intact.
Hmm. Can you talk, Bernardo, about what really drew you to Vanessa and Maria's stories?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it you're hearing already is that I think Vanessa's personal story and her mother's story are so compelling. And, you know, when over the years I had read a little bit about the presence of the Mexican-American vintners, but most of the reporting that I'd seen treated it as a novelty, mm-hmm. as a kind of, you know, fundamental part of the business, which it is. And so once I was in the world and researching and meeting people, a number of people told me that I should talk to Vanessa. And I was immediately struck by just how compelling her personal story is. It also didn't hurt that her mother is an extraordinary cook. So every time I'd show up for a meeting, I'd sort of manage to arrive at lunchtime and have Maria Robledo's extraordinary chile relleno.
That's so true.
For me, it was There's also a personal piece. I was born in Mexico. I was born in Guanajuato. I've spent my whole life going back and forth between the United States and Mexico. And Vanessa and her mother and Gustavo and everyone else you see in the film, they remind me in many ways of my extended family, of people that I know in Mexico. And, you know, at this time when the broader immigrant community, certainly Mexicans in particular, have been villainized and criminalized in ways that are just, you know, ignorant and foolish, My goal is just to tell a story where we can deepen these portraits, make complex portraits of people, and again, just demonstrate how fundamental their work at many levels, from the field to the barrel rooms to, you know, to names on labels, how fundamental everyone is in this film to this beloved product and to, you know, an economically very important part of California and the U.S. So for me, it was just about giving due, you know, and highlighting the stories of folks who've been overlooked for a variety of reasons.
You know, again, the other favorite scene connected to what you're just saying is Rene Reyes. He's a guest worker from Mexico, featured in the film during his second invitation to work in the U.S. by a winemaking company. And what really struck me, Bernardo, was the amazing footage you got. I mean, we're basically traveling with Rene to Napa, and then we're traveling back with him to Mexico. How were you able to get such incredible footage?
Part of it was Rene himself. So Rene Reyes was initially hesitant to be filmed. His employers were open to us filming with him. And then I work with a really wonderful cinematographer, Victor Tadashi Suarez, who, you know, we usually work in a very small team. It's one or two people, sometimes, you know, three at the most, and that allows for intimacy. But really, once Rene was on board, you know, he's very proud, and rightly so, of his work, of his skills. And one of the things he would tell me often during filming in Napa was, I can't wait to show my daughters and my family what I do in the U.S. I want them to know what I do when I'm gone for this long time. And so the decision for us was a simple one, is simply to follow him home. I mean, obviously, I and my crew have the privilege of going to Mexico and coming back with Rene. You know, we followed him home. And as you see in the film, we were utterly surprised by his journey and what he buys his daughters. In the film, you see him buy these special presents for his daughters and the reaction of his family. It's a very intimate moment. It's a very emotional moment. It is a high point in the film for me as well, personally. But we had no idea what was going to happen at that family reunion. And that is one of the things that I think is really potent about documentary, especially verite documentaries, is that you know, you can plan all you want, but these moments, life emerges, and you have to go with it. You have to improvise, and you have to be on your feet. And to me, that's where the power of documentary lies, is in recording those unexpected moments.
Especially in this political moment, as this administration continues to vilify immigrants on a regular basis. I mean, to see just one story of Rene working so incredibly hard. I mean, that was the other part of the footage that was really amazing to watch, was just how fast people are grabbing the grapes and putting them in the boxes and cutting the vines. And he did this for 5 months, and we follow him after 5 months of working in Napa back to Mexico. It's a 56-hour bus ride, really long. And then also just seeing him taking a photo of San Francisco as they drive by on in the East Bay. And then when he comes home, it's late at night. His daughters are hugging him. They're all crying. And then he says, as you said, he bought them two really nice gifts. I bought these for you so you will do good in school. All of this because of the work with the grapes. Are you still in touch with Rene?
I am still in touch with Rene. He did not come back this year, but we are hoping to do a screening in Mexico. Oh, Rene is from the state of Michoacán, which is an agriculturally rich state. It's also a state that's seen a lot of narco violence in the last few years. It's known for growing avocado crops, but drivers and others who work in the avocado industry have, you know, are robbed and extorted frequently. So it's a tricky situation for Rene. what you see in the film, you know, when you're talking about how fast he works, some people have asked us if we've sped up the film, and the answer is no. It's just simply his hustle. He's working so quickly, especially during harvest. And I think, as many people know, during the lead-up to harvest, workers are paid by the hour. And I believe Napa and Sonoma pay the highest rates for agricultural workers relative to the rest of California. But once harvest time kicks in, then workers are paid by weight, and so they're incentivized to hustle. And they're very deliberate about who they pick for their crew to pick, because they don't want anybody slowing them down. So that harvest period really is a kind of make-or-break moment, not just for the vintners and the producers, but also for the workers. It's a time when you can really bring that money in that you then take back home in many cases.
And do you know what the workers are paid on average?
So the bulk of this film was filmed during the 2017 grape harvest. The vast majority of the film was shot during that period. I did film a little bit in 2015 and 2016, and a kind of closing set of sequences in 2018. But really, the bulk of it was happened during 2017. And at the time we were filming, with the employers we were following, it was an average of about $15 to $16 an hour. Hmm. So again, relative to other forms of agriculture, certainly in the country and in the state, it's fairly high. That also speaks to why there hasn't been a presence of unions recently in Napa and Sonoma. The rates are much higher. Also, as you see in the film, Rene is an H-2A guest worker. He's an agricultural worker that comes in on a guest visa. And what we've seen in the last few years is a spike in the number of guest worker visas that have been approved by the Department of Labor. So counterintuitively, you've seen more of these guest worker visas come in. I mean, anecdotally, the Trump Winery in Virginia relies on guest workers as well. They've had guest worker visas approved for that winery.
Wow.
I think the thinking is that vineyards are, they know that labor is vulnerable, and there are more and more approvals being put into place for guest workers right now.
Huh. It was very interesting to hear Angel Calderon?
Yes.
So he's got an amazing story, too, because he says when he arrived in Napa as a worker, he had to sleep in an orchard under an apricot tree. And one night at 1 a.m., they started irrigating the area, and he woke up completely soaked and said to himself, "What did I do to deserve this?" Well, now he's a River Ranch farm worker housing manager, so he ensures that some people at least have a bed to sleep in and have food. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But since you brought up the worker shortage, Angel said that thousands of people come to Napa to work. 90% of the workers are Mexican. And he said that what's happening right now is it's hard to get a visa. It's very dangerous to cross the border without documentation. The border is run by organized crime cartels in Mexico. Coyotes force people to smuggle in drugs, and people are really scared. So he says this is the main cause for the labor shortage. What has your experience been like, Vanessa, with labor?
Certainly we have faced the labor shortage and experienced it. And so what my family has done is we do bring in workers through H-2A visas. We've had workers that have been with us for many years, and certainly they're still with us. But what's happening is that during harvest is such a critical time that you have to have, you know, the labor force to get those grapes off of the vine to be able to take them into the winery and crush them. And what happens, since it's so critical, it's determined by the sugar level and the acidity of the grape. That's really what contributes to the quality of the wine. So that part has to be ideal. So in order to have that when it's time to harvest, you have to have labor. Either that or you have the machinery that harvests the grapes, which in my opinion is not as high quality as it is the actual hand of the person that knows which clusters ripe and which isn't. So that is the way that my family has brought in workers, is through the guest worker program H2A, which is what Bernardo's talking about with Renee. And you have to provide housing for the workers. So my family houses them on our family land. And so it is regulated by the government. So there are certain things that you either have to provide housing or you have to find housing. Like, for example, in this case, Renee, they found housing for him at the farm worker housing in Napa. So, yeah, it's definitely an issue in our industry. And so there's also talk of mechanization labored throughout the year. That's also, I think, a problem because of environmental reason. We have to be conscious of all of those things. So yeah, it's definitely a challenge for us.
I was really struck when you said that in the film, because of the immigration crackdown, there's talk in the industry of bringing in machinery and eliminating labor. Since you have this very interesting perspective as a fourth generation grower, a winemaker and entrepreneur in Sonoma, you interact with a lot of the winemakers. And is it safe to say that most of them are still white men, the wine company owners?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a male-dominated industry, and the majority of the people are white. Yeah.
And what is the difference between the way these winemakers think about the workers and treat the workers? I mean, since you have such an interesting background, given that your family, you were raised in a family of farm workers, I mean, I'm guessing that you look at the workers in a very different light than someone who's just hiring people on a seasonal basis.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I do see it in a different light, but I think it's, I thank my parents for that because they had us working out in the vineyards. They wanted us to know what it was like to be a vineyard worker, you know, and so they were very hard on us growing up. And so knowing that, certainly you are very sensitive to the protection of the farm workers. So I have been involved since I was very young in supporting, you know, causes for the vineyard workers. But aside from that, I think that in the area that we're located, there are a lot of people. Yeah, certainly there are people that don't have as much concern. Yeah, they're dispensable. You know, we can eliminate them with. But I think the majority of the people in Napa and Sonoma that I've come in contact with just have a great heart. You know, they have a sense of we're in this together. You know, we have to come up with a solution together. And so I see that, and I support that also. You know, that's how I think. It's certainly the bigger companies you're going to see, it's all about the bottom dollar. Mm. You know, if they can replace labor, they can replace costs. When it comes to morality, that it doesn't matter. They're going to do that. They're going to bring in machinery. But I think that there's a lot of what makes up Napa and Sonoma, the majority are small family-owned wineries, owners, and growers. So there are large ones, but the small ones are the ones that make up the largest acreage and also as far as quantity of wine gallon production. Mm. So they have a good sense of, you know, supporting the workers and things like that.
You know, we do a lot of shows about sweatshop labor and the mostly women who make our clothing. And our guests say that the best way to take action on this is to write the companies, if you go shopping, to ask people at the stores, how are these workers treated?
Absolutely.
So when it comes to wine, you know, people are in restaurants, they're in shops picking up bottles.
Yeah.
What's the best way to go about that?
You know, I think that the best way to go about that is to learn about, you know, these wineries, because it is important to treat the workers right, because they're the ones that are out there in the fields. I mean, we're not working just at harvest. We're working throughout the year like the film shows. I mean, the film starts in the pruning season, which is when we start, and it's very hard work throughout the year. But it's also the energy of the people, you know, the energy of the people translate on the production and the quality of the wine. I think it's really important. And I'm not saying that all of Napa is perfect, all of Napa and Sonoma is perfect, that all the growers and vintners treat their workers right. I can't say that because I don't know all of them. But I will say we have work to do. You know, we still have work to do. But the majority of them, the ones that I've worked with, you know, have a sense that it's important to treat them right. So the way that I think the only way you can know is when you visit the wineries, you ask, mm-hmm. you know, How are your vineyards farmed? You know, how do they come in, you know, from farm to bottle? What's the process? You know, things like that. And it's just sensing and seeing how the workers are. Are they, certainly it's a lot of hard work, so you're not going to always see them smiling and things. But I mean, I go out in the vineyards, they're singing, you know, they're just really passionate of what they're doing. They're talking, they're joking around. But it is really difficult for a consumer to go into a store and know.
Right. Or order a glass of wine on a menu.
Yes.
From a menu, right?
Yes.
That is Vanessa Robledo. She's a fourth generation grower, winemaker, and entrepreneur in Sonoma, California. Vanessa and her mom, Maria, run a vineyard. She also owns a wine business consulting company. Bernardo Ruiz is a 2-time Emmy nominated documentary filmmaker based in New York. And today we're talking about his latest film, Harvest Season, which spotlights the hard work and dedication of the people who work in the fields of Napa and Sonoma, and also tells the stories of two Mexican-American winemakers, including Vanessa, about their determination to keep their heritage and livelihood afloat after the devastating wildfires that hit the region in 2017. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss national coverage of abortion rights after Alabama passed a near total ban on abortion. We will also talk about the police raid on the home of journalist Brian Carmody, who was investigating the death of San Francisco public defender Jeff Adachi. Journalists are condemning this raid as a serious infringement on press freedom. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show about Harvest Season, it's a documentary that highlights the role and the rise of immigrants in California's wine industry. And I hope you can take the time to watch this film. This is an area, if you're living in the Bay Area, that's right in our backyard. You can watch it online on PBS, and you can find the link, yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you work in the wine industry and there are untold stories that you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. And what questions do you have about the impact of the immigration policy on California's wine industry, on the immigrants who come here? You know, we were talking about Renee, who luckily was able to go home after 5 years, but we learn in the film that some people, they don't go home for more than 10 years because they're afraid that if they go back home, they can't get back. And that means that they're not watching their kids grow up and they're completely disconnected from their families. So if you have any personal stories to share or any questions about that, we'd love to hear from you. I'm sorry, I said Renee went back in 5 years. Actually, it was 5 months. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Vanessa Robledo, fourth-generation grower, winemaker, and entrepreneur in Sonoma. Bernardo Ruiz is a 2-time Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker. His latest film is Harvest Season. Bernardo, we were talking with Vanessa just about how workers are treated in Napa and Sonoma. What else really struck you when you were doing your research and making this film?
You know, I think Vanessa touched on it an important way, and that's that as there's this reported labor shortage, vintners behind the scenes are grappling with this new reality. And, you know, farm workers are central to the wine business. You know, labor is at every level, but you are seeing this rise in mechanized labor, you know, mechanized viticulture. And so as Vanessa is pointing out, most winemakers will tell you that hand-picked grapes are much, you know, preferable to the machine harvesters. The technology is becoming more and more sophisticated. And so as it becomes harder for vintners to import labor, you are seeing a greater reliance on these machines. And they're quite striking. I actually filmed a whole sequence that ultimately didn't make it into the film, but, you know, the machines straddle the vines and they shake them very roughly. But the technology is becoming more and more precise. So one wonders if there's a future where more and more human labor is eliminated. And I think, my personal thought is I don't think we've thought through the consequences of this yet and what this means. I mean, again, to go back to one of our earlier points, we're at a moment in time where we're criminalizing and villainizing immigrants and the labor, that the immigrant labor as well. And, what does that mean to the future of this country? What does it mean to the future of farming? What does it mean to a beloved product like wine? And I think we need to have really, serious conversations about this and deep concerns. I will also say you had asked about what consumers and listeners can do to be better informed and to support small businesses. One thing they can do is there's a very good organization, a D.C.-based nonprofit called Farm Worker Justice, and they do a lot of work across the country in negotiating better contracts for workers. So that's a great source of information. You can find them online. It's Farm Worker Justice. That's a good place to start. I would also say, to Vanessa's point, is to just get to know the winemakers and support the small businesses. Mm. There are tons of conglomerates. There are very big wine groups out there. They're not hurting for cash. My recommendation to listeners is to support the mom-and-pop vintners that you see in the film, so supporting businesses like Vanessa's, supporting people like Gustavo Brambilla, who has been making wines for 4 decades and has a direct-to-consumer business, wine club. I think, to me, that's really the best way of knowing, how something's being made, who's making it, and how people are being treated by supporting small producers like Vanessa and Gustavo.
Vanessa, we're seeing consolidation in so many industries. Are you seeing more consolidation happening in the wine business, more conglomerates over the years?
Yeah, definitely. I think you see it more and more as time is going by. They're buying up, small wineries and things like that, or small producers are being bought out, sometimes by choice, most of the time by choice. But it is a challenging business to be in the first place. You know, it's not something you go into to think, you're going to make a lot of money. That's why usually it's the opposite. People with a lot of money are coming in and buying wineries and starting to make wine. So it is very difficult, but it is possible. I mean, I know our family did it, I will say also that there is an organization called the Mexican American Vintners Association, and they are all producers, that come, similar history like my family. That are working very hard and have created their own wines, and that's a huge deal. And Napa and Sonoma, so I'm really proud of their organization and what they do.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that really struck me in the film was learning about what happened after the Brucero program ended, and Angel, who told the story about what life was like for him when he came to Napa, where he had to sleep in an orchard. And now he's a housing manager helping people find housing. He said when that program ended, people lived in their cars. 30 people lived in a 3-bedroom house. At one point, he found more than 40 people living under a bridge. So then he said this motivated a group of citizens to take action because photos of filthy, rundown conditions got out. And these citizens were forcing the employers to take responsibility for the situation. I mean, that's a piece of history, Bernardo, that I think more people need to learn about. And so now we have this housing for farm workers, in some cases, that's subsidized by the vineyards, not the government. So immigration status is not an issue.
Yeah. For the time being, that's right, immigration status is not an issue. And I think, as Vanessa was pointing out as well, most vintners have a deep awareness of how much they rely on immigrant labor and are generally supportive of of either immigration reform or supports there. Not everybody, certainly. There are definitely outliers in wine country. But what you see in the film is the farm worker housing center. And it's one of 3 facilities in Napa County, and each one has about 60 beds. It's worth noting that it's only for men at this time, so it's only 180 beds and only for male workers. That's really a drop in the bucket in terms of fulfilling need. It's there's a much greater need for housing, affordable or low-cost housing, whether temporary or not, for workers who are coming in. So you have workers coming in from the Central Valley or from other areas. So when you tack on the hours of a commute, you know, to a 10-12 hour day workday, it's quite a burden. So there are efforts underway in Napa to create another farm worker housing center. There is discussion of creating housing for women who are growing number of the field workforce, and it's also and also for families. But as you know, I don't need to tell your listeners what an issue affordable housing is in the Bay and generally, and certainly in the North Bay. After the 2017 wildfires, of course, that issue was exacerbated. A lot of the fire just reduced the housing stock. So you just now have a greater problem with affordable housing. But that is really one of the issues, one of the prominent issues in the wine world. And I would say that's what's fascinating about this story to me, is that in addition to these very compelling personal stories, winemaking in California, it's also a window into these other issues like immigration, mm-hmm. housing, gender equity, and the environment. All of it is there. You don't have to go looking for those issues. It's part and parcel of winemaking in California.
And in the housing complex that we see that is run by Angel, it's got a capacity for 60 people, and you can get a room with a roommate, three meals a day, and facilities for $14 a day. Is that common with the other two complexes? Is that how it's run?
It's all about the same. I think they just upped the rate to $15 a day for the workers. And then, as you mentioned before, the vintners, it's basically a self-tax. So a group of vintners all provide money to subsidize the housing there. It is technically temporary housing. It's open 10 to 11 months out of the year. But there is a lot of discussion now because, there's fewer workers are going back and forth given the hardening of the border. And so you have more folks who are either staying in California or who are just not coming back. And this is this reality that the region is facing and going to face. So I think then the question becomes, what kind of pathways to legal permanent residency is the state and the counties, how are they helping people do that? What kinds of housing opportunities are they creating? What's the plan going forward? My view is that there's a historic, long-standing relationship between the United States and Mexico at different periods in our history. There's been a hardening and expulsion of Mexican workers, and other times there's been an importation of workers. I mean, if you look at the Great Depression, there was a mass deportation of people of Mexican descent, some of them citizens. They were illegally deported from the country. And then during World War II, when there was a labor shortage, the United States imported Mexican labor given the need. After that period, there was another mass deportation of people of Mexican descent. So there's been a historic push-pull there, despite the very obvious and central presence that Mexican laborers have played in the U.S. economy and U.S. history.
You know, I have to say, when I saw this and the workers themselves saying that there's a greater need for housing, and to learn that there's not much housing for women, you just have to wonder, Vanessa, especially when you're talking about the conglomerates. I mean, Sonoma and Napa have changed so much. I mean, I grew up in Petaluma. I've seen it all. It's now so much more upscale. It's so expensive. You have to pay to do the wine tastings. I mean, there's reasons for that, I know. But there's a lot of money in Napa and Sonoma. So I guess, why is it so difficult to find people housing? And we're talking about little rooms here. And these people leaving their families, living in these little rooms for 5 months or years to pick the grapes and cut the vines, why is it so difficult to find housing for them, to build housing for them?
I have personally, the times that I've been involved in this, it's a controversial issue because people sometimes think, oh, well, we don't want it in our area, mm-hmm. there's always that. Mm-hmm. That's always what I've been faced with when I get involved in raising money for these organizations. But once they are, say, like, for example, the Napa is a really good example. That land was donated by some of the vintners. So they knew there was an issue. But it wouldn't have happened if there wasn't activism. And it was Latinos who were actively in trying to help the, you know, vineyard workers, the farm workers who needed a place to live. So it is an issue. And even to think about, you know, the three different housing units and thousands of people that come to work there during harvest, I mean, where are they all going? You know, so there's still a big problem. And I just don't know exactly, I can't pinpoint why exactly there is this sense of not wanting to help people especially because it benefits our industry so much. I don't understand it.
Well, what do you hear from people? What is their reasoning?
Mostly, you know, the reason that I hear is just I flat out think it's racism. Mm-hmm. Flat out. I just think that people are afraid that, you know, their community is going to be, you know, bombarded by Mexicans. I'm not quite sure. You know, my opinion is that it's racism.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel, and also, you know, not to just say racism, I also think that there's not enough knowledge of what the contributions are. Like this film with Renee showing his life, I think that that's important because people need to learn and need to be able to connect with others. And the only way that they will is by eliminating what's the unknown. You know, why are we scared of people that are not from here, that are working our land and contributing so much, but yet we're still afraid that it is true that they're criminals, maybe? You know, it's just, I really do think that, you know, creating these stories and the power of film, I mean, it's just so powerful. And that's one of the things that I've gotten being part of this. I'm just so proud of being part of this film because it really has created awareness that wasn't there before. There have been other films, but not like Harvest Season. And so I'm really honored to be part of it. And I think Bernardo just, you know, he did an amazing job, and I'm really honored to be part of it.
Yeah, and the other scene that really stood out was the shots of film, a film of workers, a shot of workers calling their families. One man recalls his son crying and clinging to him because he'd been gone for so long. So basically, there's these men in the distance on their cell phones calling their families. And like I said, some of these parents have not seen their kids in 10 years. And I think because of all the ugly racist rhetoric coming out of this White House, mm-hmm. It's so important to tell this human story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that these people are leaving their homes and, you know, policies have a lot to do with that. NAFTA has a lot to do with that. People leaving their homes, coming to Napa and Sonoma for months, years at a time, and not watching their kids grow up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I think you're absolutely right. And what Vanessa's touching on and what you're talking about is that, well, there's that story of sacrifice. But I think to your earlier question about why there's that not in my backyard thinking is that there is a tremendous amount of fear about the other and about immigrants and Mexicans in particular, and obviously that's been exacerbated by some very wrong-headed and misinformed and, you know, just outright xenophobic and racist rhetoric. It has really harmed you know, relations and just kind of smart logical thinking. Again, you know, there's going to be a long-term effect to this type of xenophobia and rhetoric, and even some of the people who may be supportive of these policies and rhetoric, they're going to feel the effects at some point soon. You know, as long as we continue to demonize and villainize immigrants and the labor that they bring, the more we're going to push people out, and it's, you know, I think it's a real disaster. Hopefully, one thing that this film can do is just illuminate the stories of the people who are responsible for so much bounty, for great wines in California, But I think there's a parallel in this story to other agricultural industries, you know, whether it's the dairy industry in New York or, citrus in Florida. I mean, you name it. The backbone of this country has always been immigrant labor.
Right.
At this moment in time, it's largely Latino immigrant labor.
Well,
Anthony Bourdain, you know, the late Anthony Bourdain said it very well. He said, you know, there would be no restaurant industry without immigrant labor. So I do think, you know, I'm happy that this film has you know, it had a national broadcast on PBS. It's now on iTunes and Amazon. It's actually streaming for free for another 2.5 weeks on PBS.org, so people can watch it there. But I do think these stories are important because they restore a bit of sanity to where we are in this moment, and they pull us away from some of this extremely wrongheaded rhetoric that, you know, has done little to serve the interests of this country and certainly the people who come here to work.
Right. Well, let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Angeline in Sonoma. Hi, Angeline. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. A great program as usual, and I really appreciate this, the documentary, which I was able to see on PBS last week, I guess it was.
Good.
I wanted to comment on Gustavo Brambilla. For me, the name Brambilla is such a very distinctive name. It was not one that I was used to, but I knew I had heard it recently, and I went back to pull up the movie Bottle Shock, which is about the competition between California wines and French wines from the 70s. And in that film, Gustavo Brambilla was the young Mexican kid who was working for Montelina Winery and making his first batches of wine on his own. And it was lovely to see that piece of it immortalized in film, and then 40 years of successful winemaking following that.
Wow.
So I wanted to thank the producers for including that.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Angeline. We have a little bit of time to talk about Gustavo. And like Angeline said, he's been in the business for 40 years. In the film, he says there are a lot of up-and-coming Latino winemakers and Latina winemakers, but they're not announcing themselves very loudly. So he was born in Mexico. His father came to California to find work. His father went to the third grade. And then he brought everyone to Napa Valley, and they've been in Napa since 1956. So can you tell us a little bit about Gustavo Bernardo and how you connected with him?
Sure. I mean, as Angeline pointed out, and that's I'm really pleased that she picked up that piece of information of Gustavo's biography. You know, Hollywood, I mean, Bottle Shock it's a Hollywood, you know, it's a fictionalized portrait of that moment of the Judgment of Paris in 1976. But it is accurate that Gustavo was working at Chateau Montelena in 76 and subsequently went on to work on some award-winning wines. So he's a part of Napa history. I mean, just as Vanessa's family, the Robledos, are central to California wine history. In Gustavo's case, as you mentioned, you know, he came to the U.S. as a three-year-old. He was born in Jalisco. And really from the time he was a child, like Vanessa, he was working in the fields. He told me that his first job was picking up the fallen grapes from the buckets of workers. As a little boy, he would help his father by filling up the buckets. So, you know, he's spent a lifetime in wine. And kind of what you see in the film is what you get. I mean, he's someone who's just obsessive about quality. You know, in the film, he's got his nose deep in a glass. He's always tasting clusters of grapes. He's very obsessed with particular types of flavors. And it's, you know, from my perspective, you're really watching an artist at work. You're really watching somebody who makes very individual, very specific and beautiful wines. And, you know, he's not selling to big chains. He's got a wine club. And as you see in the film, he's obsessive to the point of putting the bottles, the labels on the bottles himself. So, someone who could probably use a few helpers, but someone who does everything himself. And I think that's kind of it's a beautiful process to watch in this age of, you know, mass production and mechanization. Kind of amazing to see someone literally handcraft each one of his wines.
And we're out of time, and I don't want to give this away, but also just Gustavo talking about his connection and maybe disconnection from Mexico was very interesting, just saying that he doesn't feel so accepted when he goes back. I thought that was really interesting, too, because it speaks to what happens after generations come to this country. You know, what happens when they go back home and lose connections. I just thought that was really interesting. And so I hope everyone can see the film. Final thoughts, Vanessa. What do you hope people walk away with? And you're doing lots of events and, you know, talking about this film. And I really appreciated what you said about the workers.
I think it, what I would like people to walk away with is understanding the wine industry a little bit better and also recognizing the work of the farm workers. So that's, to me, that's most important.
Thank you. And what about you, Bernardo? We have about 30 seconds.
The biggest thing is just to appreciate the people who are making this product. And I encourage everybody to see the film and to learn about Vanessa's story and Gustavo's story and Renee's story. So to check out Harvest Season on PBS.org and also on iTunes and Amazon. You know, to support these types of stories.
Yes, and to support small farmers and small winemakers. You can find more information about the film, yourcallradio.org. You can watch Harvest Season now. It's streaming on PBS. Bernardo Ruiz is a 2-time Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker. His latest film is Harvest Season. And Vanessa Robledo is a 4th-generation grower, winemaker, and entrepreneur in Sonoma. She and her mom, Maria, run a vineyard, and they are also featured in Harvest Season. Vanessa and Bernardo, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you so
much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss coverage of abortion rights after Alabama passed a near total ban on abortion. We will also talk about a police raid on the home of journalist Brian Carmody, who was investigating the death of San Francisco public defender Jeff Adachi. That is tomorrow. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. You can find more information about the show at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.